Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Dhamma class at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, from July 1st, 2017. This Saturday's talk and Sangha discussion is the third of seven talks on the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So that last instruction, take care, Diane. Notice the quality of your mind, be at peace with your mind, relates directly to today's talk in the fourth foundation of mindfulness. But just to put this all in context, let me review what we've talked about the last couple of weeks. The sutta is called the Satipatthana Sutta, which means the four foundations of mindfulness or the four frames of reference. And it's what we should be mindful of primarily or initially in meditation. Remember, the Buddha taught meditation for deepening concentration. And from a well-concentrated mind, or at least an increasingly well-concentrated mind, we're able to support the proper mindfulness for developing the entire Eightfold Path. So the first foundation of mindfulness is to be mindful of the breath and the body, and we do that to initiate our meditation practice. That brings our focus, our mindfulness, away from the outer world and distractions, and it starts focusing on our inner world. But what's occurring most importantly, there's nothing magical or mystical about the inner world, but to be mindful of simply what's occurring in this moment and to start training ourselves to be mindful that way. To be well concentrated and with a mind that's able to actually observe what's occurring in this moment without being distracted to the past or to the future. Then the Buddha teaches to be mindful of feelings that arise during meditation. Again, there's nothing magical or mystical about feelings except it's what occurs of being a human body, a human being. We have feelings. And usually, especially with a less than well concentrated mind, those feelings will lead to distraction almost immediately. So in meditation, as we're beginning to be mindful of the breath and the body, almost immediately for most of us, something will arise to distract us. And it's usually a feeling or a thought. And again, there's no reason to get into analyzing these feelings or analyzing thoughts, just to recognize that I am now distracted by my feelings. Come back to the sensation of breathing. We're interrupting that need to get caught back up in that story that we're always telling ourselves. The next foundation is to be mindful of thoughts. And it's really the same thing. Sometimes, and the sequence isn't all that important. Sometimes it seems that thoughts initiate a feeling. Oftentimes it's feelings that lead us to distracting thoughts, an ongoing train of consciousness. Where did this thought come from? You know, where is it leading me? Why did this person make me feel this way? All these stories that we tell ourselves. Simply be mindful that this is what's coming up in meditation. Remember that meditation is for deepening concentration. Come back to the sensation of breathing. And every time we do that during meditation, we're deepening our concentration and we're interrupting the conditioned mind's need to always be self-reflective, to always be caught up in thoughts that reflect oneself. And that's really the primary purpose of the whole Buddhist teachings, is to recognize the ongoing eye-making that we're always engaged in that leads to confusion, deluded thinking, and stress, ongoing stress, to recognize it for the sole purpose of abandoning it, not to do anything with it, not to figure out where it came from. Remember, we know where it came from. It's rooted in ignorance. That's as far as we have to go with it. Ignorance of Four Noble Truths. That's all we need to know. And the reason why I say that is anything more than that is just another distraction. The reason why we feel we need more than just that simple explanation is because of a self-referential ego self, self-referential views. We want it to be more than that. We don't want to admit that my view of myself in relation to the world is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. We want it to be something much more complicated that we can get involved in. The first three foundations of mindfulness. The fourth foundation of mindfulness relates to meditation, but it also relates to the quality of our mind off our cushions. It's kind of the transition between deepening concentration and the mindfulness that is supported by concentration. Huh? Here comes Bodhi. Does anybody have a problem with the dog? He's non-allergenic, but if you do, let me know and he won't come in. Patty, you okay with the dog?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I freed my arms. So
great.
So beautiful.
He's... Hello, Bodes. There's a, well, you don't need it. You don't need that other collar now. Hello, Bodes. What's up? You missed meditation again.
Mom got the time wrong again.
And they couldn't see it.
How come you're wet?
You're wet.
Check
it out.
I don't know if I'm ready.
Oh,
so Bodhi, we're talking about mindfulness. So we're gonna. He might react to me talking, but let's see how this goes. Excuse me. So those are the first three foundations of mindfulness, the first three frames of reference, again, primarily for meditation, to deepen concentration. What that means is when these things arise, whatever it is that arises during meditation, recognize that you're caught up in your thoughts, that you're distracted, come back to the sensation of breathing. And that leads to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which is that transition between meditation, what we're doing on our cushion, and what we do off our cushion. So that last instruction that I give just before we come out of meditation, notice the quality of your mind, is a reference to this. You've all heard me say, except Patty, be at peace with less than peaceful mind states. And that sounds a little ridiculous until you understand the context that we're talking about. It is possible to be at peace with less than peaceful mind states. It simply means to be accepting of what's occurring in my mind right now and understanding the impermanent nature of all things, but most importantly, the present quality of my mind. If my mind is agitated, don't be agitated over the agitated mind. Simply recognize my mind is agitated. Be at peace with that. Be accepting of it. And it will much more quickly change to a peaceful mind rather than getting caught up in how is my mind agitated, what caused it, who caused it, why did I cause it? What's wrong with me? My mind is agitated. Come back to the sensation of breathing. Usually, and almost immediately, your quality of mind will change to a less than peaceful mind. You're not struggling with your mind anymore. You're not fighting your mind. So that leads to this fourth foundation and how the Buddha describes this. The Buddha's words. And how does one remain mindful of the present quality of the mind in and of itself? That last line, it just means of the mind, with no other embellishments, just the present quality of my mind in and of itself. One remains focused on the mind internally or externally on the mind. Pretty simple and direct, isn't it? So we're not allowing anything that's coming up internally, judgments, evaluations, analysis, and we're not letting anything that might be occurring externally. And it could be something as simple as sitting in meditation and a truck goes by or a motorcycle comes by. Recognize it. Recognize that it's caught your attention. Come back to the sensation of breathing. Or it could be something else. It could be a dog wanting some attention. Come back to the sensation of breathing. Where did he get that towel?
I kept it for emergency.
You're doing good, Bodes. He's trying to figure this all out. What am I doing? What am I doing here? One remains focused on the mind internally or externally on the mind itself. One remains focused on the origination of the mind and the arising and the passing away with regard to the mind itself, the origination of the mind. We simply take note that if there's a disturbance in the mind, we understand where it came from. But also to take note of the present quality of a peaceful mind in and of itself. Don't hold on to it. Again, that's really what this is referring to. If you find yourself in a state of calm and contentment, wonderful. Don't hold on to it. Just notice it. This is the present quality of the mind. The more that we can do that, whether the mind is agitated or at peace, the more we stop insisting that my mind be any different than what is occurring right now, the more at peace we'll be. That's another way of saying being at peace with less than peaceful mind state. Part of the fourth foundation of mindfulness. One knows, this is such a great line, one knows there is a mind. Why is that such a great line? Because we're starting to realize then that I have a mind and I have control over that mind. We're no longer driven and constantly distracted by a mind that's out of control. That's the essence of mindfulness. And so many of us don't want to say that or don't even want to think that we should be in control of our mind. It almost goes against common New Age belief. Remember the I can't think of the name, the Vitakasanthana Sutta. The Buddha concludes that sutta with saying, we gain the ability to think what we want to think when we want to think it. It's the essence of an awakened mind. We're in control of our own minds. How can we be in control of our own minds, though, when we're constantly distracted from those things that are arising from ignorance? Again, the whole purpose of the Eightfold Path. Just to read that again. One knows there is a mind. They remain independent of and not clinging to anything in the world. All self-referential views have vanished. This is how one remains mindful of thoughts in and of themselves. That's the Buddha's conclusion on that fourth foundation of mindfulness as it relates to meditation. And now he's going to transition, and I'll get to the hindrances in just a second, to what we do off our cushions. But is there any questions about that? Last step we just talked about, or I just talked about. Morning.
Is there any difference or any benefit from observing your own mind that you've just spoken about from how you just presented it or from anatta? Is it anatta when you?
I don't know. Good question.
In other words, just okay, I'm wrapped up in myself, my own thoughts. This is not who I am.
Yep.
Just abandoning that from that point of view.
Yes.
Is there any, you get to the same place, the same, is there any benefit from looking at it one way or the other?
The benefit is recognizing confusion, because a confused mind, the reason why the Buddha taught very similar concepts but in slightly different ways, such as anatta, the five clinging aggregates, or even karma, is because we get wrapped up in views that make it hard to see things directly. So you just expressed it very directly. Anatta refers to wrong views that we use to say this is a self, right? So as we're able to deepen our concentration and have the framework of the Eightfold Path as our mindfulness practice, we know how to direct our thoughts now. We know how to focus them properly. So recognizing that any self-referential thought, any thought that's a disturbance in any way, is not me. This is not me. This is not mine. This is anatta. This is that not self-characteristic. The reason why it's called that, a not self-characteristic, is we all have that characteristic, don't we? Until we recognize it and abandon it. It's all part of having a human life that is initially rooted in ignorance. Again, this is what the Buddha awakened to. Ignorance through 12 observable causative links causes confusion, delusion, and suffering. So recognizing it at that point is crucial. Kind of what we're talking about when we were talking about the wisdom of restraint, isn't it? To recognize it at that point where I-making is occurring. Remember, I-making is rooted in that ignorance. The only thing that we can make out of that relates to that whole idea of becoming. The only thing we can make out of an ignorance, the only thing we can become is increasingly ignorant. But that also points to the potential of the Buddha's Dhamma. If we recognize that, then the potential in each moment is to awaken, to achieve a mind of lasting peace and calm, which is really what we all want, isn't it?
John, when you said, recognize it and abandon it, which you say often, does that just mean, just not identifying with it, abandoning. So abandoning sometimes to me used to sound like abandoning, but it's just letting go of it, just seeing it for what it like be, maintaining a level of awareness as that's going on. That's not me. That's not mine. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it's abandoned. So that's to me like abandoning, just letting it go, letting it. There it is. I don't have to tangle. Like I always see it as a thread. Like, you know, you can get really wound like a ball of yarn, or you can just kind of sever the thread and just let that ball roll without being attached and clinging to it and winding around it.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I guess it all means the same thing. The
abandoning
is a little... abandoning, letting go is the same thing. Abandoning is a little bit stronger of a word.
Consciously.
And I think that's why, and that's why I use it. And the translations from the Pali usually use abandon. And if you think about it this way, clinging or attachment means that we are attached to something. We're holding on to it. We're dragging it around with us. The direction to abandon it is a lot stronger. Recognize that you have something that you have to abandon. You know, the clinging conditioned mind is tenacious and holding on to things. I mean, that's how it's defined itself. It takes a strong measure of intention and right effort to recognize and let go of or abandon what we're using to define ourselves. And again, it all goes back to anatta. The Buddha describes all these views, the things that we have to abandon or let go of, as like foam on the ocean. There's nothing there, but it seems like it. It seems like the most difficult thing we can ever do until we do it, and then we realize, what was I dragging this stuff around with me all this time for? Why was I hanging on to these views? They're like foam on the ocean.
I was getting caught. My feet were getting caught in the threads all the time and tripping.
Yeah. The Buddha often called this too, cutting these views off at the root. It relates to what Morris is calling a thread. That's why I talk about being rooted in ignorance. We literally have to mindfully do it, but it's not all that difficult when we have the right framework. It's impossible without the right framework. We don't know what we're doing. It's silent. It feels like annihilation, and it's like foam on the water.
I guess Morris' point kind of touched on something that I've been playing around with, and I was coming up while I was listening to you talk, because somehow abandon, letting go, all of those sort of phrases, sometimes it's like sometimes I repress instead of let go.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I was
like,
trying to
do. Oh, I need to let go of this.
Yes.
You know? And that's where, you know, I know there's a question there, but it's strangely like being gentle, but also letting go, it's like being hard, but not gentle.
So I think the question is, why is it so hard?
I think that's
so
kind of like, what's the difference between bypassing, repressing, and just noticing the not self?
So I'll explain that, why that is. Where does it come from?
And
the idea of being gentle really means stop judging yourself.
Right, okay.
It doesn't necessarily mean that you might have to do something that takes some effort, though.
That
often feels like it's not being gentle. Like I shouldn't have to do anything that's hard, you know. The reason why it's difficult, and it can often feel like you're actually repressing rather than actually doing something, is the tendency of a mind rooted in ignorance to ignore anything that challenges its ignorance. That's an aspect of conditioned mind. I just don't see it. I'd much rather avoid it or repress it. Or another word for all of that is ignore it.
Okay.
Ignoring something is the essence of ignorance. It's the essence of a conditioned mind rooted in ignorance, and that tendency to ignore anything that would challenge its own ignorance, being stuck in those wrong views. all comes back to what Lauren was saying, what we all know about anatta. Remember the Nagara Sutta. The Buddha describes being stuck in this feedback loop rooted in ignorance, describing exactly that same thing. I'd much rather repress these things that I'm using to establish myself rather than recognize them and let them go. Again, that's getting back to the essence of the problem, a conditioned mind. When the Buddha awakened, he understood all this. But then he spent another couple of weeks trying to figure out a way to actually teach it. And that's when he came up with an Eightfold Path, because it wasn't enough to just say, hey folks, you're ignorant, meditate for a couple minutes and you're good to go. He understood the difficulty of recognizing and abandoning, of letting go of conditioned thinking. And the reason why is because I think this is all there is. If I really believe this is all I am, how can I let go of any of it? How can I let go of even a shred of it? I have to have a framework for recognizing. We talked about this for the last couple of weeks. How does a deluded mind know that it's deluded? Just by pointing it out is not enough. Just by experiencing the results of a deluded mind is, for most people, unless you're Siddhartha Gautama, it's not enough. You have to have a framework. You have to first accept it. Remember, that's the beginning of right view, is accepting that maybe I don't know everything. Maybe my views are not quite right. How can I figure out a way to see this clearly? There's four noble truths. The Buddha describes ignorance, the result of ignorance, as being ignorant of these four truths. And then he described that as the first result of that ignorance is suffering. First noble truth. The second noble truth is that craving for self-identities and clinging to those identities is the origination of suffering. The third noble truth is that it's possible to end that process. The fourth noble truth is that the Eightfold Path is the path that leads to the cessation of that continuing to crave for and cling to self-referential views, the cessation of dukkha. Again, the reason why is ignorance. That's a pretty good word, though. The tendency to repress anything that would lead to awakening. Right, Bones? Thank you for the question.
Now we stand out. Look at that. It's calm.
As long as you keep
pet.
Right. These are my comments, and then we have time to get into the hindrances today. During meditation, remaining mindful of the present quality of mind is dispassionate awareness of the process of feelings and thoughts affecting the present quality of mind. And of course, if we don't have a meditation practice or a well-concentrated mind, that's on our cushion and off our cushion, isn't it? We're always reacting to our feelings and our thoughts and getting caught up in that. And why is this this way? And I need more of that and less of this. And how can any of this happen in a world? Recognize that process, that your mind is now agitated. Come back to what's occurring. That's the beginning of interrupting that process of ignorance. Noticing the impermanent quality of all mind states, the arising and the passing away of qualities of mind. So again, this is the essence of the Dhamma. Recognize the impermanence of all these things that are occurring within me, because everything is occurring within me. Most importantly, the arising and the passing away of all phenomena. It's in a constant process. If we can recognize that we're always in a constant process of impermanence, another way of saying that, we're always in a constant process of becoming. What are we going to become? Am I going to become more ignorant, more confused, more deluded? Or am I going to become an awakened, fully mature human being? That's the choice we all have. That's what the Buddha is trying to describe. The conclusion of the Satipatthana Sutta expands the four foundations of mindfulness from formal meditation to apply these four frames of reference first to the five hindrances, which may arise during meditation and certainly off our cushion. If this is what is occurring during meditation, simply remain mindful of the particular disturbance and return your mindfulness of the breath. When the hindrances arise outside of meditation, a well-concentrated mind will not be further distracted by the particular hindrance, but will dispassionately notice the arising and passing away of the hindrance. So let me just get to that. The Buddha's words on remaining mindful of, or developing mindfulness of the five hindrances. Remain mindful of the quality of mind in reference to the five hindrances. When sensual desire is present, be mindful that sensual desire is present. Pretty simple and straightforward. Huh? Why did the Buddha even need to say something of it like that? Because our minds are distracted by the constant need for sensory indulgence. Recognize, this relates to also practicing restraint at that point of contact. Recognize that now I'm being distracted by the need for constant sensory indulgence. I want another piece of chocolate cake. Or I want another this. I want another beautiful sunset. I want more of that person. I want less of that person. Same thing. It's all part of that. Notice it. Be mindful that that's what's occurring. And notice the Buddha's not saying do anything else. Don't judge yourself harshly. Don't do this. Don't do that. Just notice what's occurring. That's the essence of mindfulness, to be mindful of what's occurring without the need for it to be any different than it is, even if it's a disturbance. When sensual desire is not present, be mindful that sensual desire is not present. Be mindful that you're at peace. Just as important as being mindful when you're not at peace. Be mindful of abandoning sensual desire when it arises. Be mindful that when sensual desire has been completely abandoned, sensual desire will not arise in the future. Completely abandoned. Cessation of clinging. When ill will is present, be mindful that ill will is present. When ill will is not present, be mindful that ill will is not present. It's very easy, especially when we're practicing a well-framed Dhamma practice, to get caught up in only the negative. Oh, I'm stuck in ill will. But it's just as important to be mindful when we're not. When we're changing, when we're developing awakening. Liz was talking about this a couple weeks ago, how important it was for her to see that during the retreat. That, yes, this was actually having a real effect on her. And that's true for all of us. When we start noticing the effect of our own right efforts, it develops even more joyful enthusiasm for our Dhamma practice. So it's not just about recognizing all the things we want to get rid of, but recognize all the things that we're developing towards awakening, towards full human maturity. Be mindful of abandoning ill will when it arises. Be mindful that when ill will has been completely abandoned, ill will not arise in the future. When laziness and drowsiness is present, be mindful that laziness and drowsiness is present. This is also an aspect of right intention and right effort. When laziness and drowsiness is not present, be mindful that laziness and drowsiness is not present. Be mindful of abandoning laziness and drowsiness when it arises. Be mindful that when laziness and drowsiness has been completely abandoned, laziness and drowsiness will not arise in the future. When restlessness and anxiety is present, be mindful that restlessness and anxiety is present. When restlessness and anxiety is not present, be mindful that restlessness and anxiety is not present. Be mindful of abandoning restlessness and anxiety as it arises. Be mindful that when restlessness and anxiety has been completely abandoned, restlessness and anxiety will not arise in the future. When doubt and uncertainty is present, be mindful that doubt and uncertainty is present. It doesn't mean we have to act on it. There's a certain Buddhist tradition that talks about developing great doubt, and we should dive into our doubt and explore it and embrace it and do all these things. Maybe so, but the Buddha said when you're in doubt, recognize it. That's all. Just recognize you're in doubt. And then he says what to do with it. When doubt and uncertainty is not present, be mindful that doubt and uncertainty is not present. Be mindful of abandoning doubt and uncertainty when it arises. You're not going to do anything else with doubt. Just recognize it's there. Let it go. Be mindful of abandoning doubt and uncertainty when it arises. Be mindful that when doubt and uncertainty has been completely abandoned, doubt and uncertainty will not arise in the future. The Buddha continues, in this way, one remains mindful of the quality of mind and the arising and passing away of the qualities of mind, meaning impacted by these by the hindrances, independent of and not clinging to anything in the world. This is how one remains mindful of the quality of mind in and of itself. The Buddha's teaching there on the hindrances to not do much else with them except recognizing when they're occurring, come back to the sensation of breathing, come back to what's occurring in this moment, and don't allow them to distract you any further. And then through developing the entire Eightfold Path, deepening that type of refined mindfulness, we're able to completely abandon these hindrances. They no longer affect us in a direct way. Again, there's nothing magical about it. It just takes continued effort through the Eightfold Path. So that's the end of today's talk. Thank you. Next week, we'll get into how the four foundations of mindfulness relate to the five clinging aggregates, the seven qualities of awakening, and then directly to the Four Noble Truths. And I think we'll conclude the series next week. So any questions directly about this, what I talked about, and then we'll go around the room? Start with Jen. Good to see you this morning.
Good to see you. Thank you. That was very helpful. Glad to be here. Grateful for everybody. And I think what I heard from our discussion was that when it is hard, difficult, feeling repressed, perhaps there's something that I'm avoiding because I don't like it. Yeah. Avoiding seeing it because I don't like it. And usually that's sickness, aging, death.
Yeah. The First Noble Truth.
Some kind of, yeah, agitation.
So what do you do with it then, though, when you notice that?
Well, I think if your question is when I notice I'm agitated or when I notice, when I get to the point where I say, oh, maybe there's something I'm avoiding here.
Yeah, at that. When you recognize the avoidance.
I think just the first noble truth, which is the long version. Sickness is stressful, aging is stressful, death is stressful. Being with someone you don't like is stressful. Not being around someone you love is stressful. Losing anything dear to you is stressful. You know, that kind of that brings it really, it's like there's some peace there when you go through that.
What's the concluding statement? When the Buddha describes
it.
Yes.
And yeah, right. So that kind of being there brings me back to, oh, this is my mind. This is just my mind. But that space between anatta and whatever the rest of me is, that
reality
separation is what, that's sort of the moment where that separation happens.
Yeah.
Completely.
The Buddha describes awakened right view as understanding stress. So you're describing that point of you're describing the point of the whole point.
Right.
You know, that's really it, is understanding that. Understanding that process that we put ourselves in. I mean, that's really the another important point of it. This is not something that happened to us. It's not something that was imposed on us. We're responsible for the state of our mind, the state of whether it's confused and deluded, resulting in suffering, or it's an awakened mind resulting in lasting peace and contentment. It's up to us. And you're describing that point very clearly. Thank you. Becky, good morning. Good to see you.
Good to be here. I feel like I need to, I'm learning a lot. Like the talk was great. And when I listened to you and when I listened to Jen, I just feel like I need to study more. I feel like what I'm doing is helping me, and I'm improving. I'm feeling better as my days go by. My right effort is increasing. I've been meditating this week. Really, you know, pretty regularly, at least once a day, which which for the last month I really didn't do. Maybe twice a week I meditated. But at the same time, I feel like I just want... I'm clinging to a better understanding. So what I've done this week, I'm going to continue, is to reread the Truth of Happiness, because I really think going through that again things will start to gel. But I still feel like I'm recognizing things in myself that I've never ever recognized before. And it can be a little scary.
Yeah.
So I feel like I need to maybe understand just a little bit more about what I should do with that. Although when you say just recognize it, that's a place for me to go. You know, just recognize it. And as far as recognizing it and abandoning it, or recognizing it and letting it go, I don't think I recognize it enough yet to know what to let it go means, or how to do that, or, you know, what is that? What does that look like?
It's really kind of an underlying theme this morning, isn't it? It's such an important point. An act of abandoning or letting go can also be just doing something differently, meaning to stop reacting to things, to recognizing aspects of yourself that no longer serve you within the framework of the Dhamma. And not acting in that way is also an act of letting go.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're describing a well-developing Dhamma practice. The things such as fear arising is common. It's one of the reasons why right effort is the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path, to remind us to continue to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Being gentle means don't judge yourself that you're not more further along than you are, because you can't be. That's an aspect of mindfulness.
Right.
Going through the book again, I think is a great idea. That's why I wrote the book. If you get to the end of each chapter and you want to send me an email and talk and email about it, let's do that. But the answer is to continue.
Yeah.
You know, you even saying that you meditated more in the past couple of weeks is important for you to recognize that, the benefits of it. And the Buddha didn't. You're really describing an entire practice. You realize it's not just meditation, but it's necessary. But there's also study involved.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the reason why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path. We can't just meditate. We have to and refine mindfulness means to be mindful of the things that will develop awakening. And also be mindful of things that are just distraction, whether they seem spiritual or not. You show great insight, Becky. Thank you for sharing all that.
That's great.
It was. Patty, welcome to our Sangha. How was your meditation?
That's great.
You were able to maintain the method. You recognized you were caught up in your thoughts. You came back to your breath.
Absolutely.
That's the basic practice within this framework. And then you can see that what we're talking about are applications of the Eightfold Path and how to develop that broader framework. Do you have any questions about what we've talked about so far?
No, not at the moment. I'm definitely grateful to have come in today. Some points have been mentioned that sort of made me come back to recognizing what is urging me to continue this practice.
Yeah, good.
So I'm very grateful for that.
Well, I'm so glad you joined us today. If you're just reinvigorating your meditation practice, I suggest start with shorter periods of time, even if it's just 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, until you're comfortable with that, and then slowly add time. And remember that it's more than just meditation. You'll hear me say that quite often. There's a recording of this meditation on the website, Crossover Meditation. Have you been to my website? Okay, so you up on the top, there's, it says guided meditations. You can download it, and there's instruction there. And just remember there's more to it, and that's what our Sangha is for here. We talk about this, and you know, I hope you continue to join us. And always feel free to send me an email if you have any questions or comments. So, I send a newsletter out twice a week that describes what the lessons, what the talks will be about, and just a reminder to join us here. So Tuesday evenings at 7:15, Thursdays at 7:15, and Saturday mornings at 8:30. So welcome to our Sangha. Eva, good morning. How are you?
Wonderful, John. Great to be here. Hi, everyone. At this point in my life, it's very gratifying that things are evolving the way they are because of the practice and meditation and everything. And the study and the better understanding of things, it makes things that happen interesting. I don't know, enjoyable.
Yeah.
I did find I had a situation where I came face to face with myself and something and a behavior that I would have denied. Just for me, I would never do that. Saw it, I was able to acknowledge it, and I was able to move on with it, and I didn't beat myself up about it, and somehow, yeah, that makes it disappear, and it's really just so good to be able to have days like that, and, and not to have all these, you know, and to know that in the future, okay, if that happens, I can handle it. It's okay, I got a method.
Thank you, Eva, and good for you for recognizing it. It really is, to have days like that is worth the price of admission, isn't it? It really, yeah. It really is. The life does become more interesting and more meaningful when it's framed properly. Why? Because we understand what we're doing. You know, you're finally really in the game. You know? Thank you. Bodhi? You have anything to say? Yeah, he wants to go running.
Yep,
he's ready. Maura, good morning.
Good morning. Sit down. I think Eva, what you said at the end of that, and I know that I can handle it. You know, yeah. It's such a, to me, a beautiful thing because, you know, what everybody's been saying and all that, it's, you know, I think from my own self, I've spent so much time in my life trying to deny and move away from unpleasant states of mind and being, and being able to just observe them and be at peace with them, and knowing that I can handle it, because it really passes if you don't hang on to it too much. It's just like, yeah, I'm really pissed off right now. Your anger is really present. And being just at peace with it, like being grateful for it even, because sometimes then once, you know, the mind is at peace with it, you can go, oh, shit, that stinks. I got to do something about that, you know, instead of like, oh, I shouldn't be upset with that, and, you know, I should get over it. And like, no, it's... I remember a long time ago, John, I was in a job a long time ago, and I was trying to, like, fit into the situation. It was over on Pittstown Road, that job. And you had said something way back then, like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's because you're not, you should get out of there. And I was like, fuck off. I never ever think, like, I should get out of something. I think I should get up, like, you know, pull up my panties and, you know, do something. There's something wrong with me, and I should be able to handle this. No, this situation, and, you know, like what we were talking about last night, you know, situations are crazy. They're the first noble truth, Jen. I love what you said, you know, and just being able to really, like, see that and embrace it, it does. Edmonton, and the beginning of the week, I was just away on retreat for a week in New Mexico, and then I came back, and I was just feeling it again, sitting here. I don't know. I was just like a lot of sadness was welling up, but I could feel in my body this clenching. You. Lay down. So I just kept feeling clenching, and I would recognize like a breath holding piece. And yeah, there was nothing happening. There was no reason to be sad, but sadness was just welling up all day long, and it was so peaceful to keep embodying that, and I would be like, and then everything just relaxes, and a wave moves through, and then I feel it again, and a wave moves through, and. Like, normally, I don't want to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I want to be sad, But it was just like, they're just waves of energetic movement. Who knows, So, I just find that, and the other thing that I would say is, this is a way of being in the world. There is no completion. It's a way of coming to our life and kind of seeing the fragility of it, seeing the suffering, seeing the impermanence and not self. Like just kind of recognizing some of that and being with that. And one other thing is like. I think first, we hear, because I still want to figure it out, I still want to know more, but that's that part of this, the anatta, right, that just wants to fix it, wants to know it, and it's not about that. So we just, it's like, okay, that's that.
Mm-hmm.
That's, hello, Mara, it's hello, I see you, sometimes you're great, whatever. It's, so... And the last thing, so when I think, you hear the Dhamma and you hear it here and you accept it and you're like, holy crap, that's what's going on. Oh my gosh, And then you begin to work with it, like you were saying, and you begin to see, yeah, that is really what's going on, And then it really, seeps in. So like sometimes, so I'm impressed, I can only sometimes see, oh, that's what's going on. And there's such a joy in that. To not take it so personally. And it feels real personal because it's kind of creepy sometimes. But it's we don't have to take it so personally. So, thank you.
Thank you. You shouldn't take anything personally. Nice haircut.
Oh, yeah,
not quite short enough yet. But that need to figure it all out. I mean, that's the huge distraction, isn't it? And what we're trying to figure out is ignorance.
Yeah.
You can't figure it out because anything you use to describe it is rooted in ignorance. You just, that feedback loop.
But, and recognizing that and being, I think that's where a lot of compassion wells up. Like seeing that process in motion and in this being and recognizing it in other beings. And there's a sense of tenderness that comes because it's hard, This is this being with someone when you were staying going through that, losing someone that you love and being with someone that's difficult. Those are the suffering, and we can have a space that we can just include that all with a sense of awareness and love and the help.
Thank you. Lorna, go ahead.
Later.
Not to take a hand away.
He won't have it.
No, he's got to cling to a hand.
He is a bit clingy.
Just a little. again, just to emphasize what I was alluding to, that I think I get to the point in a little bit different way. I think I recognize recognize it, my entanglement with the world, and I recognize the disturbance in my mind through my entanglements with the world, which are how I think about myself and what I thought mattered and all that other kind of stuff. I think that's how I sort of deal with a lot of the Dharma in my day-to-day life. It's just recognize that I feel disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
And I can put it nearly 99 times out of 100 to Anatta, you know, it's a pre
existing condition.
it's my mind. It's how I thought it should be, and it isn't. And, you know, it's conditioned mind.
Yeah.
So that's sort of really how I get there in my day-to-day life. Once or twice people have spoken about the first noble truth, there is dukkha. Sometimes I take that. I wonder sometimes that I've taken that a bit to heart, a little bit too much. It's, you know, it's never-ending, and why do people want children and all that sort of stuff? You know, it's just I sometimes think I've thought about that and taken it to heart a little bit too much.
I understand that, what you're saying. The first thing that you were talking about, that really, again, you're getting to the essence of the Dhamma. The picture of a Buddha that everybody has in their mind is this being that was always calm and at peace. So recognizing that a disturbance in your mind is recognizing that you're not quite there yet. It's important. That's the essence of the four foundations of mindfulness, isn't it? It's the essence of restraint. It's the essence of understanding anatta. Recognize. That last, the Buddha described dukkha in that way to point out that as a consequence of having a human life, you are prone to confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing disappointing experiences. We don't talk about it, and I certainly don't talk about it a lot. The Buddha didn't talk about it a lot, but really the whole point of the Dhamma is to stop creating the conditions, stop giving birth to the conditions for ongoing suffering. And that also refers to future births. So the point is to get this done, to wake up, to recognize it. Now, you can also look at the practicality of the nature of suffering and say, well, why would I want to bring any children into this? But you're also, and now we're getting in a little bit to metaphysical kind of stuff, but the most fortunate thing that we all are a part of as having a human life is we have the opportunity to awaken. And as the Buddha teaches, again, I don't like to get into metaphysical stuff or mystical stuff too much. It's only on this human plane that we get to awaken as human beings. It's the only way we can understand it. So there's a great opportunity here. That doesn't mean we should all spend our holiday weekend trying to have as many children as we can. But, there, you know, really what I'm saying, I don't mean to be flippant about it because it's too important. The Buddha taught a middle way, and there's a middle way there too, you know, in everything. So thank you for bringing it up. Sorry, Boat. Deb? Good to see you.
More difficult.
good for you, Debbie, and good for you for recognizing it. And again, it's worth the price of admission, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, to have that. What a wonderful thing to take such legitimate, real pleasure in the simple act of meditating with your sister.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just remarkable. It's never lost on me how remarkable it is to be able to sit here, wherever, you know, in the middle of Frenchtown, and just sit and meditate for a few minutes together. Most people can't do it. They're not able to develop that level of comfortability with just sitting quietly. And you think about that. Isn't that remarkable that an adult human being can't just sit quietly for a few minutes? You know, but it's so difficult because of the need for our minds to be constantly distracted. Right, Boats? Good morning, Mary. How are you?
To my consciousness, the fact that I do fight it, and when I don't fight it, overall I am more at ease.
Yep.
So it's all a good thing.
Yeah, it is. Thank you for being here. Not a good thought. A few announcements before we finish with Meta. 2 weeks from today is the Sangha picnic at Moore's house, just across the bridge, about 10 minutes from here. There's info linked in the email and on the website. I think it starts at 1 o'clock.
12:01 somewhere. It's, you know, it's kind of just, you know, whatever. It's like a drop-in, open house.
Is that the 15th?
The 15th. And rain date the 16th.
And Moore just got the pool open. It's a nice pool.
Finally, yay.
Everyone's
open,
invited.
But it's been having little struggles. It's an old pool, and I've never had one. So I was vacuuming this morning. Finally, we got it going.
You know, they have a special vacuum. Not, you shouldn't use an Electrolux on it.
I put on my little mask, and I went down there. I had the Dustbuster. But it's really, it's a dinosaur.
It's a beautiful property. Everyone's invited, family, friends, kids, everybody, pets, horses, goats, pot-bellied pigs.
Cats and dogs.
Cats and dogs, yeah. That's the 15th. There were two other announcements I wanted to make. We will have class next Tuesday, Independence Day. The topic is independence of dukkha.
Can I add one thing with the next?
Sure.
If only if you feel like it. Is there a thing on there? There is no need for an RSVP.
Oh, I did. It says that on the website that if you go in, you could RSVP if you want, but if you don't, it's okay too.
If you feel up to it, it would be helpful a little bit just so I can kind of judge. And you know, if you have one of those portable chairs, you know, like over that, you know, that would be nice. Because I don't know, I couldn't. Yeah, I'm gonna try to just be at ease about holding it. It's a potluck, and I have on the website.
Yeah.
There's a kind of like a suggestion.
Suggested list.
You know, like sounds. I'm gonna do black beans with potato burgers on the grill. I don't know. John said something about hamburgers. I'm not gonna read.
Yep. If you want meat, bring meat. The Buddha wasn't a vegetarian.
No, I know, but I am. anybody can do it or they like, but I'm not going to make it over.
You don't have to. You don't have to. Someone will.
That's
so funny. Everyone's invited. Patty, you're invited. You don't.
Absolutely.
There's no
it's
length
right
of
the
Sangha
yeah.
participation requirement. So that's the 15th, rain date the 16th. Class next Tuesday. Our retreat's coming up, October 22nd, I think 19th to the 22nd, info on the website, but the sooner you sign up for that, the better for me, too. So we'll finish with Metta, as we always do. So find your relaxed meditative posture, gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body, and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future or that may have arisen from our talk today. And metta means goodwill or loving kindness, and metta is both an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path and an ongoing expression of an awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward, and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.